I'm super glad to be here. I love this church. Pastor Norman is my coach, my mentor. Pastor Paris and the team here, you guys have embraced me since our family moved from the mainland, from Tennessee, in 2008, which is like 9 years ago. And so my family is the mission field is the world, but my family is my mission field as well. It's what we live, what God has given us. And this is my beautiful family. When we came here in 2008, there were 12 to 2 back in 2008. And now in 2017, this is what our tribe looks like. Yeah, I can't believe it either. They are growing up and going. And my amazing wife, she's preaching at Grace Honolulu this weekend. So she's also preaching over there. You guys really should be listening to her. She's the preacher of the family. And our family, we love spending time together. One of the things that happened because our kids came here young, we've always loved the beaches. We became surfers. They all started surfing. They love surfing. So we just took a vacation a week in Kauai. And, anybody surfing here? Last service, there wasn't a whole lot. Anybody? No? Okay. That's good. This will relate to none of you, but I'm going to tell anyway. So there's this break on the South Shore called Shipwrecks. It's a really cool break. It goes right and turns into a nice big barrel on the inside. Again, some of you are like, I don't know what that has to do with anything, but it's a really cool break. We were out in the ocean on the first day that was there, and I've never had this happen before. I've always wondered about this, but I saw this big mass of something on the water. It was a black mass, and there was a guy on a longboard who looked like he was a local guy, and he yelled, "Shark!" And you know when somebody says something, it doesn't matter what's there, you see it? So I saw a 25-foot great white shark. That's what I saw. And I was walking on water out of the waves. God told my son, "Get up, there's a shark!" You know, and like a fool, I just was paddling, and I got out huffing and puffing, and I went up to the guy who was also on shore, and I said, "Man, was that a shark?" And he said, "Oh, no, it was actually a school of fish." And I was like, "What? What are you a shark for then?" So that night over dinner, we were talking about this situation. Lest we encounter a shark out there, what should we do? And so my son was telling me, well, he was watching some surf video, and this guy got attacked by a shark, and he punched the shark. So my son's, he's 19 years old. He's immortal. I punched that shark. So I went to bed thinking, punch the shark, punch the shark. The next day, we went back out, and I saw a brown thing on the side of me, and my son was coming through the wave towards me, and I see his eyes go, whoop, and I'm riding a wave, and there's a shark. A real one this time, like a 5 or 6 foot brown reef shark is my guess. So I grabbed the nose and punched a shark. Nah. Heck no. I did the same thing I did the day before. I got out of there. Okay, so this leads to this moment of tension because I know that we have to go back in the water. I want my boys to go back in the water. I don't want them to be afraid to go back in the water because they saw a baby shark, So my wife and I have this discussion. She didn't want me to go back in the water. "No, you're not going to go back in the water. There's a shark out in the water. Honey, there's other people that look way more edible than I do, and they're out in the water. I'm just going to go around them." And so after about 20 minutes, I said, "Boys, let's go back out in the water." And so there's this moment, though, and moms and dads, you probably have these moments, too. These always cause conflict or tension. Mom's value is safety, right? That moms are providing that safe environment. She wants to make sure the kids are safe. And I value safety as well. But my higher priority is that my kids learn to take certain risks. And they learn to step out of that safe place and live by faith. Because in order for them to do what God has called them to do, in order for you to do what God has called you to do, there are moments where you have to come out of safe into that place where you are willing to risk and put your life in the hands of God and trust Him. And so I'm always pushing and she's always creating that, so there's this tension dynamic that goes on here. But the reality is, I think in our lives, is that when life overwhelms and when there's pressures on, the temptation and the tendency is for us to kind of shrink back and then find that safe place. You know, where we can control things and where there's not, and we preserve ourselves. And I want to encourage you not to do that. I want to encourage you to do what the scripture we're about to read is going to tell us to do, which is to abandon safe. When life overwhelms, don't find that safe place. Abandon safe and live your life instead by faith. And so here's what it says in Hebrews. It says, you need to persevere. And so the author of Hebrews is speaking to people who were going for it with Jesus. I mean, they were doing great things and they were making incredible sacrifices when in the midst of opposition and for their faith, and they were leading. But all of a sudden, they start to pull back. And the author of Hebrews is kind of like, hey, what's going on? Don't do that. And so he tells them, you guys need to persevere so that when you've done the will of God, you will receive what was promised. For yet in a little while he was coming, will come and will not delay. But he says this, but my righteous one will live by faith. It's taken from the book of Habakkuk. But my righteous one will live by faith. There's going to be a confident assurance in God, and I take no pleasure in the one who shrinks back. And basically that's saying, don't lose everything. Don't let it all go because of the pressures that are pushing in on you. Don't step back. Don't shrink back. And so then he goes on to say this. Here's what he says. But we're not those who shrink back. We're not those who shrink back. And he's actually painting a picture for them. That word shrink back, it means to kind of withdraw. It means to be timid. It means to cower a bit. It's actually a visual picture that he's painting of somebody who's got, you know, like if you're a sailor and you've got your sails up and there's wind catching you and you're going fast, and all of a sudden you begin to get concerned about how fast you're going and you begin to lower your sails. And he's telling them, we're not those who lower our sails. That's not who we are. Remember, we're Jesus' followers. We're the ones who followed the man who didn't lower his sails when he could have. But he went all the way to the cross. That's who we are. And so he says, we're not those who shrink back and are destroyed, but those who have faith and preserve their souls. And so he's encouraging them, don't shrink back. When life begins to overwhelm, don't shrink back. Instead, abandon safe and live by faith. And in the moments that we have together today, I want to look at the life of a guy named Moses. And many of you are probably pretty familiar, maybe some of you not so much, with Moses. I think he epitomizes this idea of abandoning safe and living by faith. And just to set up what we're about to read, which is a pretty popular and well-known God calling Moses. Moses is birthed in a time when Egypt is the ruling nation. And the people of God, the Israelites, the Hebrews, they're growing, they're flourishing. And in order to suppress them and to keep them from flourishing and growing and becoming a great nation, the Pharaoh puts them under heavy labor. He oppresses them. He puts burdens on them. He's trying to squash them. But they're God's people, so they just keep growing and growing and growing. So about 1500 before Christ, he issues an edict that all the children under a male child under 2 years old should be thrown into the Nile. And so babies are being slaughtered. But Moses' mom puts him into the Nile in a basket. And as God would have it, Pharaoh's daughter finds the baby, sees the baby as beautiful, rescues the baby, and has the baby, Moses, grow up in the household of Pharaoh. Moses didn't know this at the time, but Moses is growing up and being equipped to lead. This is as if he is going to, you know, the preeminent boarding school and community in the world to be equipped to lead. And he's being trained in the house of Pharaoh. And his life for 40 years is relatively safe. It's just safe. It's good. The best of everything. And God is equipping him to lead. And then about 40 years of age, he identifies with his own people. He sees an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, and he goes out there, and there's something in him that says, this is not good anymore, and he breaks it up. And in the process, he goes too far, and he kills the Egyptian. And he's now a criminal on the run. His own people are afraid of him. They reject him, and he goes into the wilderness. But then he finds his wife in the wilderness, and even though his safe world is unraveling, he begins to put it back together. He finds a wife. He gets married, has a family, children, and he's a shepherd. And so for 40 years, life again is it's good. It's safe. It's comfortable. And then there comes this point where now God is going to come into Moses' world and break up safe. Because in order for God to use us, in order for God to partner with us and work through our lives, He's got to get us to the place where we're willing to come outside of safety and comfort. Most of us draw the line of what we're willing to do, even in life, at the place where convenience ends and sacrifice begins. And Moses is over here where things are very convenient, and God wants to bring him into this place of calling, into this place of, this is what I created you for. And so this is where we pick it up in Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3, this is God's call on Moses now. It says, "Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, and he came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And there the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames, a fire from a bush. And Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it didn't burn up. So Moses thought, I got to go check this out. Why doesn't the bush burn up? And when the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And then Moses said, here I am." You just say that with me, here I am. God calls to Moses, Moses responds, here I am. And then God says, "Don't come any closer, take off your sandals, for the place where you're standing is holy ground." And the Lord said, "I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt, and I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So now go, I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." So God says, "I've seen it, I'm concerned," and you'd expect him to say, "And I'm coming." But he says, "You go. Moses, you go." At 80 years old. So if any of you are wondering, am I too old to go? Moses was 80 years old when God said, go. There is a call from God that is not limited by how old you are. If you've got breath this morning, which you do, you're here, you got here somehow, there is a call that remains on your life. And God said, go. Now, there's a couple interesting things I think about this interaction. The first interesting thing is that God is, he is really involved in our world. He is really involved in our world. And I think another thing that is really interesting is that God is concerned about the suffering and the evil in our world. And if you ever just wonder, I mean, there's so many things that happen in all different places, and some of it doesn't seem to have any rhyme or reason. And we just go, God, where are you? Where are you when these things are going on? Especially as they get closer to our home, we're wondering, where are you? Do you see what's happening? And do you care? And God says, I see it and I care. And I think the other thing that is really interesting is that God's way of dealing with the evil and suffering in our world is different than I would have it if I were God. Because he could easily come down, he could take care of it himself. But he chooses to do it through us. He chooses to deal with the evil and the suffering in the world in partnership with you and I. He wants to bring his goodness, his peace, he wants to bring healing, hope, and salvation to the world through you and I. He doesn't bypass us. He is a relational God. So he does it in relationship with you and I. Again, he could do it differently, but this is how he's chosen to do it. And from our perspective, we say, well, God, surely you see what's going on. Why don't you come down and do something? And I think from his perspective, he's probably going, surely you see what's going on. Why don't you get up and do something? Because this is his plan from the beginning. It was to use you and I to be the solution, to be the answer, in partnership with us to bring his kingdom into the earth and into the families in Honolulu and into your neighborhood and into our schools and our middle schools and high schools and into our communities, not just by bypassing us, but actually in partnership and using you and I. And so he finds this guy, Moses, that he's going to do this with. Now, to me, the only stranger thing than the fact that God would actually use you and I is the kind of people that he actually uses to accomplish his purpose. Now, Moses, in many ways, was being prepared for this exact role. He was a Hebrew guy who was raised in an Egyptian culture, And so he's going to be the guy to represent the Hebrews to the Egyptians. He's a perfect statesman. He's been equipped by being educated in Pharaoh's home. He's been equipped as a shepherd by being a shepherd all these years, so he can lead and shepherd God's people in the wilderness. He is the man for the job. But he's also a man who killed a man. He's also a criminal on the run. He's also a guy who was rejected by his own people. He's also a guy who's now living in the wilderness, which is not a good thing. He's a shepherd, which in their culture, that's not a real respected thing. And he's tending not his own sheep. Whose sheep is he tending? His father-in-law, right? Now, my father-in-law is in town, and I love my father-in-law, so this is not to disparage any father-in-laws. But he's tending his father-in-law's sheep. By all accounts, it's not really success. It's just safe. And God bursts into his safe world and calls him into his purpose. And you know, God will do the same thing with you and I. He will burst into our safe world and God will call us in the ordinariness of our life. I don't know how many times Moses in the 40 years was around this area, how many days he went out there and watched the sheep and saw the bush. But this one day after 40 years, something different, and God calls him, and God will do the same thing for you. He will burst into the ordinariness of your life. He will burst into those moments when it's just you and your family. He will burst into those moments when it's just you on your campus going to school and you're sitting in your class and you're daydreaming and you're thinking. He will burst into the ordinary moments of our lives and he will call you into his purpose. And he'll say, come on, come on. In fact, some of you, you've been hearing God say, come on, come on. And like Moses, you're going, but me? I mean, because most of the time when we think about the people that God uses, it is that high-powered leader. It is that charismatic, articulate. He went to the best schools. He came from a family of means. He has wealth, and that just makes sense. And God says, you know what? I choose the weak things of the world to demonstrate my power. And so if you look through the history of God's dealings, he chooses the weak thing. He chooses people like me. I mean, I can't stand up here and sing that song. All I do is win, win. You know, what? I can't sing, number one, but I can't sing that song because that's not my record. I haven't. I failed plenty. I'm weak. I've had some losses in this lifetime. Maybe you're the same way and you've discounted yourself. You go, you know what? I could see how they could do the call of God, but I'm not sure about me. But God will come into our lives and he will call us into his purpose. The thing that I've always wanted to do, I mean, for all my life since I was four, was I wanted to be a doctor. And so when I became a follower of Christ, I said, you know what, I'm going to be a medical missionary. I had an interview with a medical school. And God, in this moment, bursts in and I have a burning bush moment with God right here. And this is basically how it went. In the interview, the person that was interviewing me was a psychiatrist. He found out that I was a Christian, and it turned into this big debate about the existence of God. And it was 30 minutes of frustration and irritation for him and me. And, you know, you learn how to do these interviews so that you can do the Miss America thing, and, you know, you're ready for all the questions, you know how to give the answer. And so he was really frustrated, and at the end he said, okay, Greg, bottom line, why do you want to become a doctor? And I had prepared, this is my moment. I'm going to rat and, you know, dazzle him with my... And I just said, because I want to see people come to know Jesus. I want to see them get saved. And he just looked at me like, boy, are you on crack cocaine? He closed up his book and he shook my hand. Basically, don't call us, we'll call you. And he left. But for me, this was the burning bush moment. This was God saying, son, do you know what I've really called you to? And are you going to say yes? Or are you going to stay safe? I wish I could have said I'd give you the answer right away. It took me some time to wrestle with that because I was really liking safe. I know what's going on. I prepared for this all my life. And God basically says, no, I want you to step out of what you've known, what you've always wanted to do. And if you want to follow me, I want you to come out of safe into this place where you have to trust me and live by faith. Best decision I ever made. Because safe and God's call on our life, those two things don't line up. In order for us to do what God is calling us to do, we have to step out of safe We have to come into that dangerous place. So sometimes we get scared. We find ourselves running from God. And we're running from God and we're trying to hide from the call, and it pursues us and it pursues us and it tracks us down. In Romans, it tells us why, because Romans says this, Romans 11:29 says God's gifts and call are irrevocable. And you can't give it back. You can't exchange it for another. You are who you are by God's design. He created you the way that He created you in all of your uniqueness. And some people call you quirky, or some people go, man, that guy is really, he's just kind of artistic, brother. You know, that artistic kind of person. Or that person is just real analytical and they're just so consistent and everything is on schedule and it kind of irritates. But it is uniquely who you are created to be for God's unique purpose for your life. And that thing tracks you down and it tracks you down. And even if you run for it, it tracks you down, and God calls you out of safe into His purpose for your life. Well, the best thing to do is to stop running from it and to actually begin to embrace it. Because safe and God's call, they don't exist together. In order for us to respond and say yes to the call of God, we've got to come out of safe. And so in your notes this morning, I'm just going to major on this one thing, because I think this is so important. I think this is so true of my particular life and story. Safe will keep us trapped in the past. Safe will keep us trapped in the past. Moses was a man who had a past. You have a past. Some of you have been running from what God is calling you to do because of your past. Some of you have been running from what God is calling because you tried to do something like Moses did. You tried to step out and you failed and it hurt and you don't want to have that again. So you're running from whatever is going to cause that same type of pain. And you can feel God say, no, come on, just trust me. But you're running and you're running because you don't want to blow it again. And safe will keep us trapped in our past. Moses had a past. He killed a man, became a criminal, was on the run, rejected by his own people, ended up in the wilderness shepherding his father's sheep. He had a past. So it's not surprising when Moses responds to God's call on his life and he says this. Moses says to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" Moses answered, "What if they don't believe me or listen to me and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you'?" And Moses has a perspective problem now. He is making this about him. And he basically says to God, "God, you know me. You know what I've done. You know what I've been running from. How can someone like me?" Honestly, you ever ask yourself that question? You ever ask God that question? God, you could use, I see how you could use that person. I see how you could cause that person to succeed. But Lord, me? And Moses is basically standing before God and saying, "God, how could you use somebody like me?" And Moses thinks that he's going to do something for God. And God really is going to do something through Moses. And so God has to work with Moses to help him understand, "Moses, this is not about who you are. This is about who I am. Moses, this is not about what you can do or what you can't do. This is about what I can do." Because in order for you to fulfill the call of God, you can't make it about you, and you can't make it about what you can or cannot do. You have to humble yourself and make it about Him and what He can do through your life. And so Moses is pleading with God, and he continues on, and he says to this, he says, Moses says, "Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you've spoken to your servant." And he's bringing up some speech and physical things. "I am slow of speech and tongue." And the Lord said to him, "Who gives humans their mouth? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, because I will help you speak and I will teach you what to say." And I love this. God basically says, "Moses, I know exactly who you are. I made you. When you look in the mirror, you're not looking at somebody who was randomly created. You're looking at somebody who was created specifically for what God would call them to do. Because God partners together with you and I to bring His goodness into the earth, to bring His salvation into the earth. And so don't hate on what God made to fulfill the call that God made to fulfill. He knows exactly who you are, and He knows your past, and He knows your failures, and He knows your hurts, and He knows your losses, and He knows the places where you tried to do something and you failed. You tried to do something and it didn't work out. And He knows the times when others have hurt you, and He knows all those things. And I think the thing that we get wrong about our past and God's ability to use our lives is we think that God can only use the good stuff in our lives. God's like this big, you know, heavenly juice machine. Any of you got a juice machine at home? Anybody? Oh, come on, really? Okay. Thank you. That juice machine, you put in the fruit, right? And it separates. It separates the stuff that is not going to work with the stuff that is good. So you get the juice on one side, and then you get the pulp, and you get the rind, you get all the seeds on the other side, and you get rid of that, and you drink the juice. And we think God works the same way. He takes our gifts and our talents and all the good things, and those are the things that He uses for His purpose. And God doesn't work like that. God takes those things, like He took Moses' preparation for His call, but then He takes all the other stuff. In fact, that other stuff that we usually would like to discard, that's the stuff that God wants to use powerfully in your life. It is the stuff that you look at your life and you go, I'm disqualified. I can't do what God's called me to do because of this. And God says, no. That thing that you're trying to throw away, that is the very thing that if you give that to me, if you surrender that to me, if you have me come and forgive it and redeem it, I will use that as a strength through which you minister in your life. And there are some places that some of you have been hurt, and there's some failures, and all of us at one point or another, you walk with a little bit of a limp, right? That limp that we don't want, that becomes the foundation from which God pours through our life in a powerful way to others around us to fulfill the call of God on our lives. All He's looking for is somebody who will say, yes. Yeah, God, yeah, I'll do that. Who will humble themselves and say, God, yes, this is not about me. This is not about what I can do. This is about you and what you can do. And I will step into this place. And God, you know what? I think God loves to use the unlikely. He loves to use those who have disqualified. He loves to use, again, in our minds, we picture the kind of person that God uses, and there's this airbrushed image that we have, and God erases, and He says, that's not it. I want to use every man, every woman, every child, every person, everybody who will humble themselves and say yes. Everybody who will say, this is not about me or my power, this is about you and your power, and if you go with me and you empower me to do it, then God, here I am and I will go. That's what this is about. And I think God loves to use people like us. Normal people. People who have losses, people who have pains, people who have experienced failure. People that have disqualified themselves based on their past. God says, no, it's your past that makes you powerful. So the question this morning is, will you give God your yes? Will you step into that place? Will you allow Him to use who you are, all of you? Not just the good, but the things that you wish weren't even a part of your life. Will you allow Him to work through those things to use you to respond to the call of God? Now, about 10 years ago, I was the campus director for our Every Nation Ministries. I was living in Nashville, Tennessee. It was a really good place for us. We had a 3,500 square foot home. That's like, what? Which is actually small in the community that we lived in. It was one of the smaller ones. Nice home, though. And I didn't even want to tell you how much it costs to live there, because it'll make some of us get sick. And everything was safe. And I began to feel God prompting me out of safe. Son, I'm calling you to something, and this is not it. And I was doing everything I could to stay there. I was living in the same area where the Steve Merle and Kevin York, if you know those are people who are president and executive director of Every Nation Ministries. So I was learning so much from them. Our family had all kind of relationships. We were embedded in the community. My kids were digging it. They were loving it. And I was getting off the highway one day, and I was pleading with God, God, let us stay here. And, you know, this is good. And I just heard this one word, sell out. And I thought he was talking to my wife, and it just kind of hit me. Sellout. And I don't know how God talks to you, but he talks to me in sarcasm. Oh yeah, son, why don't you stay here and be a sellout? Or you could leave safe and see what I will do through your life. Or you could stay safe and do what you want, and have your nice home and everything else like that. Nothing wrong with a nice home. Or you can trust me and leave it and come out here. So at the time, he didn't tell us what was going to happen and where we were going to go. We sold our home. We didn't even know what we were going to do yet. So we just felt like the Lord said, sell your home. And I felt like I needed to take a big step of faith, lest I get more comfortable and safe. And so we sold our home. We moved into a rental that we stayed in for six months. And if you got a family with five kids, you got a lot of stuff. Really get a lot of junk. So we moved from a home, 3,500 square foot home, to a 1,500 square foot rental place for 6 months while we waited. And in that time, God orchestrated it so that we could connect with Pastor Norman and our Grace Bible Church family here. And I came and took a trip, and I felt like God said, this is it. So we packed up all of our stuff, our junk, and put it on a trailer, and my wife and I had this great idea. We could fly across the country, but we wouldn't see any of it. And how fun would that be? So we packed everything into a minivan, and we drove across the country. Because I am stupid. Sound like such a great idea. Pastor Norman, what time am I supposed to be done here, by the way? I forget. Okay. So, I am compounding to the risk factor in our journey, and we're driving across the country, and we're really enjoying it. Our family loves to do this, but there are places, and especially during this time of year, where there are tornadoes, and we don't really have that here. So, and we were driving through Kansas, and there were these, you know, swirling little tornado clouds that were starting to come up. Well, I'm dad, so dad's got to, no matter what happens, we're good. Well, this box that we had on top with all of our stuff, it broke, and the wind was catching it, and it was hitting the roof of our car like that as we're driving down the highway. Well, the more that happened, I wanted to get somewhere safe, so I drove faster, but the faster I drove, the louder it got. And I got this son in the back. He's kind of an instigator, and he just starts slowly saying, we're all gonna die. Now my family, they're good participants, so the other four all started in rhythm. We're all gonna die. We're all gonna die. So you know what I'm thinking, right? We're gonna die. We didn't die. But we made that journey, and then we came here. And there have been other moments along the way where I've had to go, whew, that was tough. Do you know what I realized when I got here? Is that everything that I'd experienced previously, and every difficulty, and every hardship, and every failure, and every moment where I was like, man, why did I do that? And every place where I didn't shrink back, and I didn't give up, and every place where I became more humble. Because I think that's the point, is that in our losses and in our failures, there is this quality of humility. In fact, there are some people in here who are older and who walk through more stuff, and you walk with an incredible limp. And on the outside, people may look at you and they may not see the call of God, but in you is a deep call of God because of what he's done in your life, through your failures and your losses. And if you're a young person in here, get around some of those people and begin to learn and glean from them and begin to receive from them, because that will help you live by faith. And all those things that God was doing in me prepared us for this step of the journey. So here's the point. God is at work in your life right now. He made you for what he has called you to do. There's no mistake. And he takes all of your experiences, all of your victories, and all of your failures and your losses, and he shapes you for your calling. Some of you are so powerfully equipped to minister and to pray for somebody who is hurt and needs healing, and to look them in the eyes, and not because you read it in a book, but to go, you know what? I know that God can meet you in your situation. And you have the power to do it because you have experienced the pain of loss, and you didn't shrink back. You didn't let go of your faith. You didn't draw back from God's call on your life. God has a call for each of us. And he wants us to be those kind of people that don't shrink back, but who live by faith and preserve our souls. Kind of people who will say yes, yes to God when he calls. Let's pray together this morning.